be very, very quiet when hunting Miles.
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 583 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined today by Mr. Seth Miller and Mr. Foz Mamoon. Gentlemen.
Howdy.
Good day.
Seth has returned from good old Hamburg.
Yes.
How was it?
It was good. It was old. The show was good. The weather held for us, which is always a little touch and go this time of year, but I'm exhausted still. I'm getting too old for this shit, but you know.
Is it almost all inside?
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. There's like four separate buildings that house the main conference hall, but they do have walkways between them.
Okay. That's good.
Like can be covered, like, and they're like those extendable awning things, almost sort of like you sometimes get on hard stand ramps. Mm-hmm. Like they can stretch it out up to the door if they need to.
Yeah.
But when the weather's nice, we just, you know, open the emergency doors and walk between because it's actually nice.
Well, I'm glad you had a good time. You recorded an episode with Jason. People can check that out at the show. So that's good.
Yeah. No, it was good. I mean, listen, I will say, you know, we're echoing some of what we talked about last week, but there's the good stuff always that you see is like a couple years away, and that's annoying. There's one or two bad things that are also a couple years away. But overall, I think, you know, most of the stuff we saw this year wasn't super far-fetched. There was one like super first class product from Safran and Rave Aerospace, which Safran was a seat maker, used to own Rave and then spun it off and the private equity and whatever, who's the entertainment systems. And it was like this crazy ass wraparound screen on a first class bench. So you can imagine it like 10 feet of screen going like sort of starting on the sidewall of where buddy dining is, all the way behind the buddy dining, all the way down the long side, all the way behind the passenger around, and then also had an overhead bit. So if you reclined fully, you could watch the movie on the ceiling instead of on the screen.
I don't know if I like that at all.
It's very. They also talked about, like, if you're lying on your side, we could put it on the sidewall and even adjust the skew to or parallax just to, you know, cover what angle you're looking at it from to make it right. And it was like, uh-huh. Cool. But it's that one is very much a concept. It's not they plan to go to market with it. It's one of the hard things about like the super fancy shit that they show off is a lot of it is, you know, pie in the sky concept stuff, not real.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to read between the lines a lot.
That's going to be, I mean, fun to be in that job just to come up with stuff knowing you're never going to actually have to deliver it so you can go crazy.
You can make it good enough that we can show it off in a demo.
An MVP, if you will.
Yeah.
What about AI? Has that concept been dropped from the show? Or is it still popping its ugly head?
Still there. Jason and I talked a bit about one of the things that was playing for AI, which is seats that you can talk to.
No, I'm good.
You're good, I'm good, but there's a reasonable business case to be made for accessibility reasons of someone who's blind or vision impaired and is trying to figure out how to make a seat recline. If they have, you know, an app that they use on their phone or especially if they can do it with their own device, having big buttons and whatnot that can control the seat that way.
Yeah.
And the one Ricardo showed off was natural language. You know, Jason's example was, I'm tired, and it went to bed mode. Or, I need to go to the bathroom. I want to pee, I think he said even, and it went to upright. So, there are some interesting things there. Obviously, a lot of that is deciding what the words are, deciding what they mean, and programming it, and then indicators of whether it's actually doing anything, or if it didn't understand you or not. And, right, like, there was a different one that was app-based that you could speak to or just push the buttons and, like, integrate it into the watch. They had a watch widget for... So, again, that's one where... You know, I don't need that. I would find it annoying to use, but there is a subset of passengers who would use it well. interestingly, the Recaro folks didn't see it as an accessibility thing until we told them it should be. The other folks doing the watch / app based one absolutely approached it as an accessibility thing.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Neither of them knew the other was doing it. So both were like, and we're the only ones. And we were all like, actually, you're not.
You need to walk over 30 booths.
Basically.
All right. Let's talk about JetBlue and United and fuel surcharges.
It turns out if you're using TrueBlue points now to book on United Metal,
yep,
you have to pay those.
Awesome. Everything keeps getting better.
So they were already a bad deal most of the time, and now they just got a lot worse.
Yeah. Foz, does your coffee mug say meh?
It does.
Sorry, that's the first time I've seen that. That's about right for that story. AA and United, it's hard to tell what's actually going on here, right? So Scott Kirby said, hey, look, we've talked to the administration. It was actually reported. Kirby didn't come out and say this. It was reported that Kirby was in talks with the administration and mentioned how United would like to merge with American, basically buy American.
Yeah.
And then, 5 days later, American comes out and says, that's not true. They've never approached us. But we're thinking about something big on the future.
I think more or less that. I think it took a little longer for American to firmly deny it. But
which is odd in and of itself.
Like, why do you have to come out with a statement saying no if it's really no?
Yeah.
The whole thing is weird. It dates back to and now this week or a couple days ago, CNBC had a story out saying Kirby originally started thinking about the idea last fall, mentioned it to the administration in February, which tends to align with the timing of the statement from, I think, Duffy saying this administration is in favor of mergers. And it was a weird, why did they say that moment? And now it turns out we know why. But yeah, the whole thing is very strange.
Is Kirby just some kind of underappreciated genius and he's playing the long game here to get JetBlue? Is that what this is?
That's my guess.
That's what most people think.
I don't think he's that smart.
I don't think he'd need to do that.
That too. It's not necessary.
If the administration really is as keen on, these types of transactions as they seem to be, I don't think you need to seed the conversation. I think you just do it.
And they'll follow through. I mean, they've already played their hand. They've said, we're all for it. So,
right.
But could it be that he's trying to get Delta to act on something?
Like Delta make the first offer and he goes in and makes a better offer?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's kind of setting him up for failure, though.
Maybe, maybe not. Right. Delta's not going to sit back and watch. So maybe it's let's socialize this to see if Delta tries to do anything. It doesn't have to be JetBlue. It could be anyone.
I say, do they socialize it so that Delta can buy Alaska, United buys JetBlue and leaves Americans sitting with nothing to get?
And they just put them out of business via monopoly?
Yeah.
Or duopoly? Yeah. Yeah.
Someone suggested to me the other day that, just speaking of random merger talks and whatnot, because JetBlue has apparently hired advisors, which I still not seen if that's confirmed or not, that Breeze should buy JetBlue, which would be a hysterical way for Neilman to be back in charge.
I mean, that would be funny. It's also very pie in the sky for Breeze to be able to do that.
I think it's just money.
It's just money. Yeah, it's just money.
It's just money, and Neilman knows a lot of people who like spending on airline money and believe in him and have over and over again. So
they like to invest $1 billion to get a million. It makes sense. Yeah.
And I don't necessarily think that American would be left out, right? American could go pick up Spirit. It's more in line with their business.
Hey-o!
Wow. Wow.
Boss was working that one.
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
He's waiting. But I actually wouldn't be super surprised by American buying Spirit. With everything that's going on with Spirit, I mean, Spirit's basically, days away from going out of business.
Still flying tonight, though.
Still
flying. There was rumors that with fuel prices, they were going to fold over the weekend. They've also apparently talked to the administration about supports. So,
I could use some support.
Yeah. Yeah, but your existence and success is not critical to the national airspace.
Neither are Spirit's, though.
According to the... That's not what the current DOJ position is.
They're critical to moving people to Florida? Like, I don't... what's the criticality?
Yeah. I mean, listen, we all saw the JetBlue Spirit merger attempt ruling. There's a weird...
I don't know. But things have changed since then as well.
Yeah. Well, okay, so let's talk about that for a second. Think about that from a perspective of looking back on history now, like where both those airlines are today. What would have happened had they actually, had JetBlue bought Spirit or the two merged? I think they'd be in worse shape. Yeah.
Agreed.
It's funny to me. So, anyway, what comes out of all this? AA comes out with a press release saying we're not for sale. But they kind of hint that they're looking for someone as well in that press release. I don't see them buying anybody. I don't see them having a strong enough position. I mean, Spirit maybe.
Them buying Alaska?
No, I don't think so.
I mean,
do you want to buy a company and integrate a company that's already in the middle of an integration?
Well, I mean, it would make it go smoother than what's been going on thus far.
I think if you're going to do it, you let it get worse because it's going downhill fast, and then you buy them.
Well, the reality is, like, even if they put an offer out today, it's not going to close for a year.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, but you got to make the bid based on when the share price goes down, not based on when the operations go down.
Yeah, that's fair. But I think Stephen was saying the operations going down, not the price.
And I think the share price, I think the share price follows.
Saying if you can't do the deal now based on it being, you know, operations being a disaster in a year because you're still paying for the theoretical good operations.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, who's going to win the Seattle battle for Delta? Alaska. That's who's going to win it for them just because of how bad things are with this merger and everything behind it. They've changed the UI in the app more times in the last 6 months than I don't know.
Yeah, but now you can have either the Alaska or the Hawaiian skin in the app, right? Do you ever switch it to the Hawaiian version just for fun?
No, I don't. I'm basically trying to book tickets and I can't do that. So
you need to book a ticket. Do you want to use an app to buy a ticket? Are you crazy?
Are you the Amtrak app has a better user interface and it's just a web view that barely works sometimes. It works more than the Alaska app lately. So anyway, I'm going to move on. Delta new.
I have a segue on the,
okay. Tell me
Amtrak thing. So last week I was flying Air Canada. Someone at Air Canada decided to load up all the rail stations into the flight info. So when you go look for LHR, you get like 15 stations you have to scroll past before you can get to Heathrow. They don't fly anywhere other than Heathrow in London.
Yeah. that's fantastic. This is East what is it? East Broadling? What's the one station that I'm thinking of?
Ealing Broadway?
Ealing. Yeah, this is Ealing Broadway. Yeah. Yeah, this is that one. Like, oh, yeah. That's where I want to fly.
You have St. Pancras in here. That doesn't help me.
Yeah. Paddington. Now calling
QQK, you. QQP, QQS, QQU, QQW.
It's like, so
as ZEP, ZLS, they really did put in a whole bunch of stations. At least they've changed the priority now, Foz. The actual airports are at the top.
Well, that's good because I opened a ticket for it. But I'm like, do these people not test this crap?
No, they don't. They don't test anything.
Also, if you just type the word London into, I'm doing it on the web. I assume the list returned on the app is the same. East London, South Africa is the first London return. London, Ontario, Canada is the second London returned. And then you get London, UK, in which it's City, Gatwick, Heathrow, Luton, Stansted.
And then they fly to one of those.
And then you get all the train stations.
In the app, Heathrow is still not first. It's Ebbsfleet International Railway Station, London City Airport, London Euston, London King's Cross, London Liverpool, London Luton, London Paddington, London Victoria, London Waterloo, London Gatwick, and then London Heathrow.
So the fact that it's a different sort order in the two app views is also bizarre.
But when you put an airport code in, why can't that be the first one?
Did you, you're doing that with the airport code?
Yes.
You type LHR and that's the result set you get?
Yes, yes.
You're on the website, if you type LHR, you just get Heathrow.
Yeah, not in the app.
I feel like they're using the same developers that Alaska's using, because I like you put in right now a round trip search in the app. You cannot select the same day departure and return for the flight unless you go back to the main screen and then go back to the date select. So
why
this is
the same day ticket, Steven. It's not like business travelers go on day trips.
Yeah, I mean, it's just never
happens. Highest margin, highest value revenue.
Yeah, no one does this, right?
The other thing about the Alaska site that drives me batty is when you log in, it puts you on your Atmos account page. Mm-hmm. There's no icon on the top left to go back to the main screen to do a flight search.
Yeah, it's awful.
Like, do these people not use their own stuff?
No, they don't. They fly private.
Well, maybe this is the problem, right? All these airlines have employee desks where they book travel, so they don't actually have to use it, do usability testing.
Well, United notoriously did all their stuff in all the employee stuff is in the main app. That's part of its bloat problem.
But it's a different workflow.
Yeah. And I mean, that's part of the bloat, but it is to force people to use the app, which is nice because bugs do get reported. How much of that gets reported? I mean, they've made the app, United's made the app much worse with whatever they've done in the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 updates, because it's just gotten slower. They've created like these weird panels for selecting the class and it just loads funny. Anyway, let's talk about something else.
It's like part of that just in general is the problem of trying to do the sort of fair family matrix display on a small screen.
It is
in portrait mode. It just sucks.
It sucks, and it's not intuitive to what you're supposed to do, and it takes forever to load.
Yeah. So.
And in the latest update, they also broke the filter to not show you basic economy or basic fares.
Yep, that as well.
How else are they going to say basic business? And not give you any miles.
Yeah. Delta cabins. A350-1000s are getting new cabins. And the 330s are getting a retrofit?
What's the story here? The 330 retrofits we knew was coming. That sort of slipped out in a regulatory filing a little while ago. And obviously, the 350-1000s had to have something since they're coming new. It will be a next-generation Delta One suite, reverse herringbone layout, privacy doors, but no front row special whatever. Buddy dining kind of premium, extra premium thing, which a lot of airlines have done lately.
Do you think that's a miss on their part? Like, do you think it's intentional, or do you think they had already decided on this product and didn't want to go back and rework it to be extra premium?
I spoke with someone about this in Hamburg, and it was definitely intentional.
Okay.
It was a consideration. They're going with the, all of our Delta One passengers are first class. We don't need a separate seat for that shit concept. And I
appreciate that.
I think they're leaving money on the table.
You think people are going to pay for those special seats? Like a marginal amount, or like a substantial amount?
Yes.
$499 on United, right?
$300 on JetBlue, and people buy it. And I say this because you could say it's employee class if it's full, but on many flights I have seen, those seats are blocked well in advance because people are buying them.
Yeah, but the difference is JetBlue has 2, United has 8.
Okay.
It's a lot more seats to sell.
Sure.
I mean, the worst thing that happens is they op up somebody into 1 or 2 of them.
Yeah, and there is especially with United, there's a soft product cost. It is a higher value product beyond just the space in the cabin. But if you don't have anything else to do with that space anyways, why not?
But I feel like this is just like first class. No one ever paid for first class.
Very few people did, but some did. And when they did, they wanted it, right? Air France keeps it because people are buying it. They don't keep it for fun.
I think that'll be the interesting tell, right? Is how do the airlines handle this if no one pays for it? Like, how does United handle it on San Francisco, Singapore, where no one pays for it, and they've got employees on the standby list? Do they put employees in those seats? That'll be the interesting tell for me.
Yeah,
because then it is like international first class.
Trying to remember who I was talking to, which airline. It was, I want to say, either United or American. One of them put an embargo on those seats, the like front row super seats for a little while it's coming online to allow the employees to get the flow down smoothly with regular passengers before it was full every flight because people were joyriding.
Gotcha.
And JetBlue did the same thing when it launched Transatlantic. Employees couldn't take Mint non-rev for like 6 months or 3 months. Yeah. Because they wanted it to like actually be a product and get things smoothly running and then fill all the seats.
Yeah. I will say that I think the Delta cabin on the A350-1000 looks really nice. I feel like they have always had really good looking seats and just overall look and feel. It's been really good, I think. I'm still not sold on doors. I kind of wish that the seats, I've talked about this on the United seats, that the business class seats were closer to the window. Like, I wish you weren't closer to the aisle. That's one of the things I like about the classic Polaris seat is that you can pick one that's closer to the window and you've got a little bit more privacy. It's a little quieter in my experience. You can't really do that on the Delta seat. So
now, it's interesting. I mean, this segues into the next topic, which is Air Canada also unveiled its cabins for 7810s and XLRs, and Air Canada consciously chose not to do doors on the XLRs, but is doing doors on the Dash 10s.
Did they give a reason not to do them on the XLR?
On the XLR, the reason, I spoke to head of cabin design or something like that. He was actually in Hamburg for the unveiling. So they had there's a Collins Aurora seat. That Collins booth had a pair of them sitting on the stand. And he was basically stuck in one of them for an hour and a half while journalists just rotated through the other seat, which was a neat way to do it. Do the interview in the seat, right? It's cute. And so in my like 5 minute slot with the guy, we talked about that. And his comment was basically, you don't need it because you do it for privacy and for the appearance of privacy. And if you're in the seat and you're reclined, you can't see any other passengers. What you see is the wall, sort of the vertical wall opposite side of the aisle. If they put that in, they either would have to shrink the bed or shrink the aisle width, and neither of those was reasonable. And also, the reason they didn't put a proper premium economy seat on board is those planes are going to do a lot of transcons in addition to transatlantics, and the Canadian transcon market apparently will not support a more premium clientele, and so they're not doing it.
It's either business or coach on those transcons. I mean, that's kind of evident. I mean, I was doing Vancouver, Montreal quite a bit for a while before COVID. And they were offering the premium economy on like the 772s and the 787s for fairly cheap as an upgrade option whenever I would do that. So
yeah,
it clearly wasn't selling, I guess, out of the gate. I'll be kind of sad to see some of the wide bodies leave the transcon fleet. It's going to kind of
like
for Air Canada. Like, it sounds like they're going to use these for those routes, for those types of routes. So,
well, I think it's going to be a couple of things, but similar to United, they can't do it wholesale. They need the capacity.
Yep.
Just in general, moving bodies and people. Air Canada also routes planes through the network that way to get them back and forth to Toronto.
Yep.
Right. So they sort of Toronto, Vancouver, Asia or Oceania, and then back, and then onto Europe and back. So there is some fleet utilization that requires it. And then the other ones that it's replacing is like LA, where they don't send wide bodies. So there it's an upgrade.
Yeah. Yeah. They're also doing a business class plus, right, on their 7810s. So that bulkhead seat, isn't that in the product?
I believe so.
Yeah. So there you go. Another one, Foz. We got to see how it works out for him. Foz is shaking his head on video.
I think it's just going to be another employee class.
I mean, we'll see. I don't think you're wrong.
I think it sells better than Foz does. I think that's a much less expensive. It's just like whoever bought domestic first class. Okay, it was nobody. And now that they sell it at a reasonable price, 80% of the cabin is paid and 20% is upgrades.
Yeah.
If you sell it as a regular business class ticket, price, and it's reversed a little bit, but international business class became more affordable at one point there. And then there's an incremental upsell versus, you know, thousands of dollars to get the first class. I think there's a decent subset of people, either the ticket was already paid for and I want that other special little extra bit myself, work travel, or premium leisure folks will be like, meh, why not?
But for $500, you get a nicer champagne, you get a little more space and a bigger screen.
I'm not saying I would do it. I'm saying I think the airlines have done a decent job of marketing it. And, you know, if it, whether it's the like additional space, it's the buddy dining thing in some cases for a couple traveling together, even if they both, you know, even if they both get that special seat and one has to walk around the through the galley to sit in the other place, like, I think there's some folks that'll do it.
One of our friends just sat in that seat and said their wife tried to use the buddy dining. It was not comfortable at all.
On United?
Yep.
Yeah.
No, it's terrible. There's zero space in that buddy dining seat in United. Don't buy it for that. Multiple people I know have tried it and said no.
It's just not a comfortable seat.
There's no space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think Ed already flew on it too, and he didn't have great things to say about the premium either.
Yeah. I mean, part of it is implementing it well, but you look at like Condor and Virgin and all of the airlines that have implemented this front row thing, most of them are selling it okay.
I mean, Condor was doing it for like $200 on a one way from Frankfurt to Joburg, which I thought was a fair price. And so I bought it just to try it.
Yeah.
I like their setup of the seat. I like the buddy dining seat's a better seat than what United has done, which is there's no table next to it. It's an actual bench on their planes. So it actually has room.
I haven't sat in it yet. It sounds like United maybe made a design misstep along the way.
Yeah.
$200 is very different than $500.
Agreed. Especially on a 9-hour flight.
I talked about this a little bit with Jason last week, but like $500 for 4 hours in the Skynest on Air New Zealand.
Yeah.
New Zealand dollars, that's a lot of money.
Can we take a tangent here just for a second? I don't know.
On this podcast, we try not to do that sort of thing.
Okay. Well, so I was talking to people about the Skynest thing, and I mentioned, I was like, I'm not going to pay like that much money for 4 hours of sleep on a plane. Yeah. When I could, at that point, I could just buy the business class seat or, you know, upgrade or whatever I need to do to get that business class seat. They were like, and someone's like, well, 4 hours is about all I sleep on planes. And like multiple people told me this.
Yeah.
Am I the only one who sleeps like 7-8 hours on long haul, like ultra long haul flights?
No.
Like
how ultra long haul are we talking? Like transatlantic, I can sleep from Boston. So it's only a 6-hour flight. I'm lucky if I sleep 3.
Yeah, I'm talking like more like going to New Zealand.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what I did on JFK Haneda. I probably only slept 4 to 6 hours of the 16 or the 14.
Really?
Yeah, I was unhappy about that. I wanted to sleep more. Just my body was like, nah, we're cool. And I didn't want to drug myself on the plane. So
I think that's the other thing is like I can fall asleep anywhere if I'm tired. If I'm not tired, I'm going to stay awake. Like on Sydney DFW, I slept like 7.5 hours on that flight. It was a great bed. Like it was fantastic.
It's also for me, it was time of day thing. I could the daytime departure out of JFK, so it was a noon or whatever departure. Like that's not a good time for me to sleep. I can take a nap with the best of them,
like Kirby.
Yeah. Well, no, he takes 20-minute naps. I take like 2-hour naps.
But like I felt like I was going crazy. People are like, oh no, you just need 4 hours of sleep. I'm like, I don't know what flights you guys are on, but like if I'm doing San Francisco Singapore, I'm sleeping 8 hours on that flight.
I don't know what life those people are on that they only need 4 hours of sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway,
Sun Country and Allegiant have gotten their DOT approval for merged operations.
This is really a pro forma thing. When airlines merge, they have to have approval to keep operating under both company names, even though they have a common owner.
Yeah.
And there's a transition of international route authorities that move into the new operating company name, but still are operated by the brand of whoever's operating it. And so some of those approvals came through. It's an expected step on the merger process, let's say.
But, interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. What it really means to me is I got to find an excuse to fly Sun Country real soon because the brand's going to go away.
You're just going to fly to Minneapolis for the hell of it?
I might go hang out, you know, call up Nick and see if I can buy him a beer.
JetBlue new premium credit card features are almost reasonable. This is definitely a Seth story.
And it's barely a Seth story. I got to find that tab. But yes, JetBlue's premium card, they added a whole bunch of benefits to it because the original one was terrible. Just not good. But here we go. Companion Pass, which, you know, many companies offer, usually not on the $500 card when they do exist. JetBlue's version is unique in that there's two, but you have to get, you can get a $500 pass after spending $15,000 in a calendar year, and a second pass up to $1,500 if you spend $75,000 in a year.
Okay.
On the card. But the part, so, okay, fine. I think having to have spend to get it is certainly a way to ensure people don't just, you know, pay the money to get the value, right? They have to actually put spend on the card, and the credit card company and JetBlue both get better value for that. Up to $1,500 value is clearly trying to get people to buy Mint tickets. So it's trying to induce that. But like, if you only buy a $500 ticket, you don't get the extra $1,000. It's gone. Also, simply book and pay for your companion's trip on your reservation, apply the pass, and receive a statement credit after you both travel. Statement credit makes it sound to me like you have to pay using the card to get it. I can't, and it's, there's a tiny window of maybe not that you just get a credit on your statement of whatever, even if you spend elsewhere. But, yeah.
Yeah. I don't think they're going to give you the statement credit if you buy it on another card. They'll give you $300 on your card. I don't think so. That's, yeah.
25 tiles towards elite status, which is halfway to Mosaic One. Some better annual statement credits for travel, and then a 15% redemption rebate, which, if I remember correctly, is stackable. So, with some other things, but currently the base cards are 10%.
Okay.
And so this gets you 15.
Okay.
So, you know, 15% back, and it's a fixed 15%. It's not like up to or whatever. It's just you book the ticket, you pay the point, you pay the original amount of points. After you fly, the 15% gets credited back to your account. So anyway,
it's
better than it was.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like a less, it's a slightly more shiny turd.
Yeah.
is that wrong?
But, you know, you also get the Blue House Lounge access.
Yeah. When does that open up?
JFK is open.
Okay.
Boston's never been closer.
Never been. They're building it.
This summer is now what the press release says. It used to say it was, you know, shortly after JFK, early in 26. They had all sorts of euphemisms, but now it's this summer is the date they're giving.
Okay. Very cool.
And then they're adding Class Pass if you're into that sort of thing, which I guess in New York almost is useful. But
what's that?
It's a sort of ad hoc gym membership kind of thing.
Okay.
But a lot of the gym type places, you like participate in it, but like limit how many times you can use it at any one location. Because why would they buy your membership if they can just get them for free through this program? So,
yeah.
But it was like this thing to like do drop ins at random gyms and spas and things.
Yeah, very interesting. Billy Bishop and Jets, you have an update?
I do. Not so much on what's actually happening with the Jets there as a possible reason why perhaps the Ontario government is trying to buy the airport and force Jets in it.
Okay.
Doug Ford, who's the premier of Ontario, had the government buy a private jet for him.
And he wants to use it at a Billy Bishop and not.
Yeah, hell yeah. Why would he go all the way up to what's it called? To Pearson. Yeah, that came out. He's now agreed to sell it. But someone raised the point of like buying a private jet is not like you go to the lot and you're like, oh, that one's cool, I'll take it. Right. Like the process of doing it, getting it inspected, all of the, if you're doing it right.
Yeah.
Takes a while. And then you got to get it fitted and all these things. And so now they're like, but it's apparently an oopsie, like they already own it and are having to, he's chosen to sell it now because it's a scandal, but there you go.
Love. Wasn't his brother who was the big scandal ridden guy who was the mayor of Toronto for a long time?
He's been riddled with scandal for a long time too.
So do you think this happens? Like, do you think it still happens?
I don't know about the actual airport stuff. The news about the private jet thing is just come out over the past week, and they have agreed to sell it apparently. So,
and here
I think it's going to be a setback. Go ahead,
Foss. Maybe I was saying maybe. I thought AC was giving the government incentive to broaden Billy Bishop.
Yeah, I just think that that puts a black eye on. I mean, this news puts a black eye on why the airport was going to be opened up.
Yeah.
Because you piece that together. So anyway, changes to the United Polaris Lounge and access. I put this in here like just a second ago. This has been in the terms and conditions, Seth, for a while. I think you found on the Internet Archive.
Well, there's chunks of it that apparently are different. So like the base... There's the basic, just standard access to the lounge thing, which is international partner business class departures get United Club access.
Yep.
And then there was a separate chunk of the page that says certain airline premium cabin passengers also get Polaris access.
Okay.
And the archives don't have that chunk, but it's unclear to me which ones have since been booted out, but apparently some have. So some Star Alliance partners, you would be able to get it Polaris access, and now, and it only seems to be the joint venture ones where you still do.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's ANA, Lufthansa, Swiss, and Brussels, there might be probably. And Brussels Airlines, I think maybe.
And ITA.
And ITA, which makes perfect sense.
They're part of the joint venture.
I know, but it's...
Are they part of the joint venture, or are they applied to be part of the joint venture?
And maybe it's still just application pending, but I think they're supposed to be. I think they were they part of the joint? Yeah, maybe it's still application pending. There was, because there, that was one of the things, is like the original approval was like from Europe was, we're not going to let that happen. And then it was like, maybe we will.
But like, I think someone was posting on Reddit for Singapore Airlines, specifically at SFO, you get an invite to the Air India Lounge. Part of that is because Singapore is now operating out of A and not G.
Okay.
But then other people were like, yeah, you can still walk over to Polaris. And someone was like, yeah, that's like a 40-minute walk if you don't want to go through security twice. And someone tried it.
All the way around the long way?
Yeah, you have to go all the way around. That's the only way to get over there. I guess you could like... Yeah, I mean, that's the only way to get in there behind security. So, but they said that they tried it and they got denied access. So, it's kind of wild that United is just denying a bunch of Star Alliance carriers Polaris access.
But it's on the Star Alliance lounge.
Fair enough, Foz. I know you're annoyed because it's overcrowded.
I mean, something had to be done about the crowding. San Francisco is the worst one.
San Francisco is the worst, for sure. Although I would argue Chicago's just as bad.
Even after the expansion?
Even after the expansion. I was in there like right after it opened. I'm like, this is too many people. I'm going to leave. Is that what the problem is, though? Is you think it's partner carriers are filling the lounge up? I don't think that's what it is. I think it's just like the lounges weren't built for the number of customers that are in Polaris.
In San Francisco, absolutely. Because everything is connected.
True.
When you look at something like Newark or Chicago, no.
But to make it a blanket, I mean, I get it. It's not a Star Alliance lounge.
Could you imagine if they started putting carve-outs by airport?
Mm-hmm.
San Francisco, they have to find space for the coastliner people.
Well, that's another thing, is I think that's really what this is driving this. It's like you've now committed coastliner seats in the Polaris lounge.
And there's a lot of them.
And people will use them.
But they're 100 a day. Right, but... Only a small number of that couple hundred is around the same time as the international banks.
True. I still think, like, for me, I miss the United Clubs with showers in them. Like, that's the biggest bit of it.
They exist.
One in Newark.
There's some others, too, now, I think.
Does Houston's not have any anymore?
Nope. Houston got eaten up for the Polaris Lounge.
Oh, because Houston eat up Deckers Polaris now?
Yeah.
Boo. Didn't one of the sea lounges have a shower also?
The new sea lounge upstairs has
Houston. No, in Houston. I'm sorry.
Oh, it might have. They may.
I know it. I used it once, but that was usually 20 years ago.
They may still have it. I'm not 100%. But I don't think anything else does.
I gave up on my lounge tracking app a long time ago.
Yeah. Anyway, that's what I got to talk about.
Okay.
I think the last thing I want to share with everybody that listens is I posted this on Blue Sky. It was an article about how your PNR is built and what it means and like what is in a PNR. But there's a whole series. It's a 6-part series about basically all of the stuff, the infrastructure around airline support systems. So things like Sabre and like all the stuff that built up to Sabre. People should go read it. It's at ajitem.com. It's good long reads if you like reading interesting history. So anyway, anything else you guys want to chat about?
I'm good.
No, I'm good.
Awesome. Well, Patreon supporters, thank you for supporting the show and stick around. We're going to talk about T-Mobile and Wi-Fi. We're going to talk about some drone enforcement, COPA, and EasyJet adding a Marrakesh base. If you're not a Patreon supporter, thanks for listening. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you next time. Happy travels.
Take care.
See you later.